Hello, Pro Wrestling Torch faithful. This is Kelly Wells, and I am the host of PWT Talks NXT. I missed last week, but at least nothing noteworthy happened on NXT, so that was no problem. I am back from vacation. Had an awesome time up at my family's lake house cabin. I say cabin. It is not that. It's the lap of luxury, because I have family who are doing well. And I'm, you know, a leech. So yeah, it was a good time. So I'm back, and I'm here with a couple of other guys that are going to talk about this week's NXT with you. That felt a little bit Monday Night Raw to me, but in a good episode of Monday Night Raw, and I'll talk about why a little bit later. Let me first introduce Tom Staupe to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was almost distracted by somebody coming down the ramp. So while you were reenacting the Ski Lodge episode from season 5 of Frasier, I was covering the NXT tapings for PW Torch, as I do. You can follow me at Tom Staupe on Twitter. And I also cover the MLW TV tapings, at least I think I still do. They just did Battle Riot up in New York, and now they're doing another event in Fort Lauderdale. So if they do plan to come back to the Gilt Nightclub here in Orlando, I will keep doing that as well.
Would you believe that not only I get your reference of the Ski Lodge episode, but that it actually somewhat applies, because there was a romantic misadventure that happened between a couple of friends of mine up at the cabin?
Delightfully
and screwed. A French ski instructor.
Delightful.
We all know it for. Oh, I love it, Harley. Harley brings it home with the French ski instructor. Yeah, so for the two of our listeners who know the episode we're talking about, they're just like, hell yeah. Okay, we also have Harley R. Paget here with us this week.
That's me. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I co-host the Tuesday livecast Talking Honor. And this week I did the written report for NXT because Justin James is off with some zombies.
He
should be so lucky.
He is at a little bit of a rock concert. The zombie, Rob Zombie, I want to say.
At his age?
Opening.
Is that safe?
Rob Zombie isn't opening at this one. It was some band he had not heard of, but he is off seeing Marilyn Manson, because Justin is old, and that's what old people do. So here we go. We had a show that had a 20-minute main event interview segment. Which is how it felt a little bit raw to me, but in NXT fashion, they kind of paid us back for that by loading us up with four matches anyway. So four matches in the first 40 minutes, full into this show. I have to say that's pretty rare territory. I doubt they've done that very often. So we did get four matches, so that was good. Also had two mid-match run-ins, not so much run-ins as stride-ins, but interruptions at any rate, after one interruption last week. So maybe trending a little too far in that regard, but we know that won't happen at TakeOver, so probably not a big deal. We are going to start with the main event, which is setting up the triple threat match that I believe we all probably knew was coming at Brooklyn TakeOver Brooklyn 4. Ciampa, Black Gargano. Oh, by the way, I do want to mention, if you want to email us, as many folk do, and ask us questions, have us field them here on the show, you can go ahead and email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And I'll throw that at you again at the end of the show. We do have some emails this week, and I will get to them at the proper time. So, Ciampa, Black Gargano. We had Tommaso Ciampa giving his delicious victory speech. I'm a massive, massive Ciampa fan. I have been for a very long time. The tournament, obviously, the CWC was big for me. That match with Gargano and everything they've done since. I was aching for him to be a heel, even though the DIY thing was kind of working, and he's knocked it out of the park in every possible way. Anyway, he gave an interview. Walked in on by Aleister Black, who was then walked in on by Johnny Gargano, and I think we all saw what was coming, but an awesome tangled mess as Gargano laid it on a little thick that it was his fault, and Black agreed. So Let's go ahead and get Harley's thoughts on this entire discussion. And the big question is whether or not this for you is an acceptable step in the direction. It's obviously continuing Gargano Ciampa, but does the addition of Black and all that change this enough for you? Because I know Justin, for instance, was having trouble with how long Gargano Ciampa was going on.
Yeah, because our thing was, after their last match, what the hell do we do with Gargano and Ciampa next? We threw it out on this show. We're like, three stages of hell match, casket match, buried alive match. Like, how could we take this to another level? And we were thinking gimmicks at the time. What kind of gimmick can we throw on their next match? And they went with the classic, the original gimmick match of all gimmick matches, the title. Winner of this match gets the top prize in the company. Adding Black, I think, has refreshed it in a lot of ways because he doesn't feel so much like the third man anymore. It feels like an even feud. Black hates Gargano and Ciampa equally at this point. Ciampa feels both men are below him equally. He said, you guys can fight to decide who's number two, but it doesn't matter because I'm number one by a wide margin. And I think it creates an interesting story going into Brooklyn because you figure the basis of the match is going to be Gargano. Gargano has any intention or interest in fighting Black. He will if he has to. You know, if Black attacks him, he'll fight back. But I see the whole match just being Gargano chasing Ciampa, Black either getting in the way or Gargano being shoved aside. And I don't know. I think last week on the show we were talking about, oh, this ends in Gargano winning the title. I don't know. I think Gargano becomes so single-mindedly focused on Ciampa at Brooklyn that, again, it kind of takes him out of the equation and Ciampa retains again. But then what? Then Black goes up to Raw and then Gargano and Ciampa continue? Is this when is this going to be like a Raven Tommy Dreamer thing where they just feud for like 4 or 5 years just for the rest of their careers?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good question. For me, I'm running through who wins this title match. And what's our biggest gripe every time TakeOver comes around? It's that we feel like we can book the show. And then when it comes out, we feel like, okay, I kind of saw a lot of that coming. I've certainly been surprised. And I've certainly had shows where I only got 2 or 3 matches correct, but for the most part, I do get them all correct. This one, I feel really up in the air, and I can see storyline reasons, very strong storyline reasons for any one of these three guys to win. This was, I think, a great setup, a great segment to really get this match set up. Kind of odd backwards booking that the NXT title match was the last one booked for the show. I assume the last one. This was the fifth match booked for the show, and that's usually what they give us. Could be a sixth in there if they want to throw some easy thing in there, but it feels like everybody super important is booked unless they want to throw a secondary tag match on there, which is not something they typically do. So,
or something with Keith Lee.
Yeah, right. They could do something with Keith Lee joining in. There you go. Wasn't even thinking about that, but they're getting his introduction out of the way on next week's show, so maybe they won't feel the need to do that unless they can really throw something in together quick. Who is the low man on the heel totem pole right now? I guess Cassius could work that. Yeah, you can kind of do whatever you want with Cassius right now. Do want to call out a couple things from this segment. First of all, Ciampa. Okay, so in Ciampa, you've got a great heel who is giving some great promos, really coming off as truly a bad guy. This is what you want in a heel. So when you have someone like Ciampa refer to himself as the greatest sports entertainer of all time, it sounds like As corporate as that sounds, it sounds even worse when somebody this anti-establishment and this much of a jerk has to say it. When you're doing this seamless of a promo, and somehow it stands out to me more when it's a heel promo, like a badass heel. If this was The Miz, maybe he could say it because The Miz is trying to be flashy. He wants to be an entertainer, whatever. But you take somebody like Ciampa and say this. I know that we can't change this. We've had our share of things we've said on the show and then watched come true on NXT, but we're not going to get rid of them saying sports entertainer until Vince is out of the way. So, but anyway, I wanted to call that out. Also, the you deserve.
I thought that was like the point, though.
Right. Maybe. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Go ahead before I
knowing it's. You know, knowing it's going to needle the indie fans, the fans who are cheering for Adam Cole and EC3, calling himself a sports entertainer instead of a wrestler.
I'm on board with that if that's the intent. But I guess that's like a trigger term for me that I've just hated ever since it popped up.
That's why I said it.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. So it probably, given how good of a heel he is, That probably is true. But anyway, so that brings me to the second thing, the You Deserve It chant that happened to Gargano after Black Mass. Now, storyline-wise, he did deserve it. But man, in Gargano, you've got somebody that the crowd has really rallied behind. And I think they're playing with fire having him be this much of an F-up, if you know what I'm saying. I know that babyfaces have to be in that position some, but I don't know how far back you guys go and if you were into WCW, but Sting, part of the thing with Sting is that a lot of people turned on him because he was constantly doing stupid things and constantly shaking hands with Ric Flair and falling for heel tactics that it was like, come on, man. Every fan saw this coming. I'm not saying that this is a bad thing yet. It's another aspect to Gargano, but I just feel like when somebody is this popular, this over, then you got to be careful that you don't make them look like an idiot too many times in a row. And now if he gets the title here, I think a large segment of the audience will be like, well, that's only because he cost it to Aleister Black in the first place. And there could be, I don't know if there would be a backlash on that. I'm maybe overthinking this. Who knows what the Winter Park crowd will do? Let's talk to the Winter Park crowd. Tom, what do you think?
thanks for lumping me in there. no, a lot of them are really good people. Yeah, that chant did. I was conflicted when I heard it. What you're pointing out about it, as well as what Harley pointed out about Gargano's affiliation, if you will, with Black, you know, a tenuous affiliation, and he's still arguably, not even arguably, he is seeing Black or seeing Red when he looks at Ciampa, kind of has me thinking about backpedaling on my prediction from last week that this is going to be a quick turnaround for Ciampa and that Gargano is going to get his feel-good win in Brooklyn, because it makes too much sense that Black being involved would work against Gargano more than anyone, and that yeah, you're absolutely right, that right now is not peak Gargano popularity. I like these layers they're adding to his character. I like this. I'm very invested in the journey that he's on. But yeah, now may not be the ideal time to do it. It may be, let's deal with this Black thing. And then, you know, although people will surely criticize this being prolonged even further, perhaps the big blow off needs to happen at War Games, where it is back to a one-on-one for the title Ciampa Gargano.
Do we know that War Games is happening again?
Yes, they announced it on Raw, actually.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. One of the times I tuned into Raw recently. I forget what that pertained to. I think it may have been while the Authors of Pain were coming to the ring or something like that.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast, Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Now, I did recently compare this upcoming triple threat before it was official, and I guess technically it isn't official, but we see that this is clearly the direction they're going. When we were speculating that this could happen, I was criticizing that perhaps it could end up, although I really like this match, it could end up like the SummerSlam main event of The Rock defending the title against a feuding Kurt Angle and Triple H. Kurt Angle and Triple H in a very effectively told soap opera blood feud with one another. And The Rock wasn't really involved in that. He was just there to defend his title. It arguably shouldn't have been a title match, but it worked as a match in and of itself. And it was The Rock wasn't really involved in the narrative. In this case, this segment right here completely sold me on Black having a personal issue with both of these other guys. So I don't feel like he's extraneous to the feud. So I do like the triple threat stipulation here.
I dare say this is one of the better triple threats put together at actually creating an issue between all three. It seems like, well, the main roster has used multi-man matches as a crutch for a very long time, used them as a way to get people on TV. At WrestleMania 2000, there wasn't a single male one-on-one match on the show. Not a single one.
That's right.
The only singles match on the show was Terry versus the Cat, and it was a bra and panties match, I think.
I think it was a stink face match.
Eddie Times. Oh, God, that could be.
That's a real barn burner.
Oh, jeez. I recently watched WrestleMania 2000 as I was kind of, semi-recently, as I was going through my pay-per-views in order, and I have such a love-hate relationship with the Attitude Era that it was kind of a trudge. It's okay to watch. It's fun. There's a lot of really great talents, but a little goes a long way. So I've gone a little slower through the Attitude Era. And you know, there's some bad stuff coming up in like 04, 05, 06, whatever it is. Anyway,
looks like a stink face match was SummerSlam, actually. Just
okay. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking it was Brian Panning's match, but yeah, that SummerSlam match I must have watched recently too. But anyway, so we've got that three-way match coming. We've got a full slate of matches already put together. We got Ciampa, Black, Gargano, Ricochet, Adam Cole, EC3, Velveteen Dream, Mustache, Undisputed, and Kairi Sane. So looking like a good show, as you thought it might be. I do have two emails about more or less about this segment. They obviously pertain in ways that you will figure out. So, they are similar emails, but we're going to read them both. First of all, from Patrick Alog. Hey guys, I only started watching NXT in fall 2016. Where does Ciampa rank in greatest heels in NXT history? He's probably the best heel in all of WWE since I came back to wrestling in fall of 2016. Also, went to NXT in Southern California while on vacation, and my brother, who doesn't watch, enjoyed it. He said he can't commit to watching, but he is willing to go back to another NXT event in the future. Plus, the troll that he is, he enjoyed the crowd and the shouting he did. Keep up the good work, and God bless. Patrick Alog from Green Bay. Where does he rank? One. He is the best heel in NXT history. I'm not even going to mince words there. I love what he's doing as a heel. There have been other great, great, great talents who were working heel, but the only one who's on his level of heeldom, and now I'm almost hedging, is Kevin Owens.
Owens and Sammy.
Yes, now that I think of Owens, that's actually a little bit harder question than I thought. We've seen some other guys in the Hall of Very Good, like Bobby Roode was a good-ish heel. The Undisputed Era are good-ish heels, and there have been others, but it's Ciampa, it's Owens, and it's everybody else. Those guys are just on a different plane. Now you got the Velveteen Dream, but what is this character exactly? He is a heel, but he's also a heel who gets cheered a pretty healthy amount. So I'm going to withhold there, even though he's one of my favorite all-around talents in the company, period. What do you guys think about Ciampa's ranking otherwise? Do you have any – is there another name to add, or are you pretty comfortable with Ciampa being right there?
If I want to be weird, I'm going to throw out Baron Corbin, because I absolutely loved how he went out in front of this crowd that wanted, you know, the quote-unquote five-star match. And he gave them nothing. You know, people would be fervent, like, this is finally when we're going to get a match from Corbin. And he would just hit his finisher and walk out of there and give no one anything to feed off of. And I really liked that. And when he started to lose, he was such a sore loser about it. And it felt like who he actually is. So, yes, Kevin Owens absolutely is the other name that comes to mind. The difference is that for me, I actually like just real feelings watching the show. I loved watching Kevin Owens on NXT. I love watching Ciampa on NXT. When Corbin was on NXT, I hated that guy for the exact reasons that he was making me hate him. So that was very effective for me.
That's an interesting pick, and I guess makes sense. And I guess the question you could ask about Corbin and those matches is that heel shtick, or is that just a product of his limitations? And the bigger question, does it matter? Like, does it matter why,
right, that's fair,
why it's working?
Especially
as long
in
as
the
it's
post,
working.
Yeah, right, yeah. Especially in the post-kayfabe era, where sometimes things that we don't necessarily consider conventional to professional wrestling may work. With Ciampa, I did want to say that, you know, absolutely to his credit, that when it's perhaps my favorite thing about him is that when he's saying that he or when he's out there cutting these promos, he's not just leaning on saying that he doesn't care about the fans, and he's not just ripping on whatever town he's in. He actually seems to be speaking from the heart and speaking as the uniquely motivated individual that he is. And if he does harass the crowd, it feels like it's possibly just because it's cathartic for him after all he's been through, and all the heat that he does take from the crowd. When he does take relatively cheaper digs, it's more original stuff like this sports entertainer, greatest sports entertainer of all time catchphrase that he's doing. So it feels like he is a fully fledged character that is thinking of these lines as they come to him, and saying what he really feels, regardless of how many tickets it's going to end up selling. He feels like a real person with real emotions, which is so rare nowadays in pro wrestling, and it is wonderful.
Yeah, I also want to call out that through all of the things that he was doing perfectly heelishly during this interview, he also elevated that title. Did a great job of making that title seem important. Not that it hadn't been, but I mean, none of us were completely blown away by Black's reign until recently. So they gave us something to invest in his reign just before swiping it away from us, which was a masterful heel move on the part of the company. So I really just every aspect of this triple threat match is working for me. I don't like multi-man matches. I never have. I've always thought they were problematic for this reason or that, but number one being that they're a crutch. But this one is put together. It's not just, hey, we're all good enough, we all qualify, like they've done with the women like four different times. There's an issue here. It's perfect, and I love it. All right, I'm going to read the other email.
Mind his own business.
Yep.
And then these two guys who hate each other just come barreling down the sidewalk and take him out. And it's beautiful. It's like something out of a movie. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like the Punisher's origin story or whatever, right? In Marvel Comics. Mind his own business, and he gets caught in the crossfire of this thing that's happening, and now he's out for vengeance.
Right. And it's like they did their part. Like, they barely even acknowledged him. He was just there. He was just collateral damage. And even Gargano, the face, just leaves him alone and is
runs right past
away
him down the ramp
him.
Like he's not even there.
Yeah, just crazy.
He's the champion. Like,
here is the other email from Chris Fielder, one of our faves. All right, and he writes, "Hey guys, tonight was a pretty darn good show. I only have one question for all of you, but first I just want to tell you how great this show has become. Thursday morning has become my favorite now just because I know I get to listen to PWT Talks NXT on my way to work. Sincerely guys, y'all are all awesome, and this show, in my opinion, is the best podcast Pro Wrestling Torch has to offer, hands down. After watching Ciampa tonight, I just want to ask, who is your favorite heel in NXT, past or present? I don't know if it's just because it's happening right now, but Tommaso Ciampa is my pick. Everything he does, from promos to Twitter to his in-ring style, reigns true as an absolute and total heel. Let's hear your picks." Well, we've just done that, Chris, because this was a great question from both of you.
I got another one.
Go ahead.
Not number one or two. I feel like Ciampa and Owens have those locked up. But my number three, Bo Dallas.
Oh, God, of course. That's so early.
It was such a slow transition from babyface that the fans don't really like to babyface that the fans hate, into go-away heat, into real heat that they were using. When he would come out, the fans just were so upset. It was similar to Ciampa, just so upset to see him and see him with a microphone. No, we don't want to see your slideshow of Bolivia and all these other places that you've been. We don't want to. When he lost the Loser Leaves NXT match and he had to be carried out of the arena by security, just that was totally different style of heel to Ciampa and Owens, who were much more vindictive and much more personal. But and still,
Bo's goodbye was amazing too, when he acted like he was going to get all heartfelt and then he just said, "You people stink." Like, it was just such a – it was corny, but it was still just – I want to go back and watch that again. It was lovely. I'll have to figure out where that was, that Loser Leaves Town match. But if you were on a roll, go ahead.
No, that was all – yeah, Bo Dallas. And especially because, Owens had his history with Sammy and ROH that he could play off of. And Ciampa even had his history with Gargano. They were best men. He had a foil. Bo Dallas didn't have like one specific person where all the heat was generated from. He was able to work with a couple different people, Neville and Big E and some others. And yeah, so maybe he deserves more consideration than I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I'd have to – I missed a lot of that. I missed the slow burn. I joined in at the time that I got the network. I've seen every single episode since the network and no episodes before. So I'd love to go back, but there's always an insane backlog of things I'm trying to do. So who knows? I know I've said this before on this show months ago. I haven't done it. So I'll believe it when I see it, and I'm sure you guys agree. As for the other stuff you said, Mr. Chris Fielder, I feel like half guilty reading that stuff on the air, but I just love it as an ego boost to us. Thank you again, Chris, and all of you who like this show as much as Chris does. I tell you, the things you write are so nice that sometimes I wonder if it's one of these three guys just giving us with a different email address just to pump us up, to give us like to pipe in heat like they did with Goldberg early. Anyway,
it's the fan signs being held out at university.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Chris Fielder, baby. So let's move on to some matches, since we're 20 minutes deep in the show and we haven't talked about any of them. Our main event, our de facto main event, was Candice LeRae versus Shayna Baszler. Was this announced? I don't even know if it was. Nine title match, Shayna versus Candice. A decent-ish match. Candice losing, and this being given away on TV in such a nondescript manner, almost makes me think her stay down there will be short. But I have been wrong many, many times about the Gargano and Candice saga. But Shayna and Candice, this was kind of a slight week for the women. This was the only thing we got from them. We had more from them last week on the show that I caught. But Candice and Shayna. Any comment on that, Harley?
It definitely – one of the issues I have with the women's division right now is it doesn't feel like a lot of people are getting traction. It feels like there's a lot of trading wins back and forth. Candice wins 1 week. She loses 2 weeks later. Same with Lacey. Same with Dakota. I mean, other than Bianca and Kyrie and Shayna, it feels like everybody else is just kind of, and it's my same complaint with the tag division, which we'll get to with the Mighty and Street Profits and Heavy Machinery, where it just feels like there's a big, big drop between sort of the main event scene and like the mid card of the division.
And that's,
and I don't know.
Yeah, that's such a big thing. With a small division, that happens a lot. And we've seen that throughout time. In NXT, with the women, that's actually been a problem a lot. It's either one person on top, Asuka, and then the one person that's going to face her gets a few wins leading up to that match, but otherwise everybody's losing. So if you're there at the wrong time, like Peyton and Billy, you're losing basically every match you wrestle. But yeah, it's a small... Do you have the answer for that? Do you know how better a small division can be booked?
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Not really, no. Ring of Honor is kind of falling into the same thing where they don't have a lot of women. And so they bring in a lot of guest talent, though. They bring in women from Stardom and other promotions. I mean, NXT doesn't do that, but they could definitely make more use of enhancement talent, maybe. Or if they had more like regular enhancement talent in the way that they did with Blue Pants back in the day.
Right.
Recognizable enhancement talent in the same way that like Sabatelli and Moss kind of were. I don't know if we have that in the women's division, do we? Like, Lacey's getting a push now. That was her before.
They've done some things with women that have popped up that are not on contract, like Santana Garrett. I don't think she's under contract, right? But she popped in and she did a job a month
Shouts
or two
McKenzie.
Ago. Yeah.
Yeah, so, there have been at least one or two per taping, which is fun to see. It is. I enjoy that they do that, but they have such a deep women's division in their performance center that it's hard to believe that we don't have more than just Vanessa Bourne coming on to lose every once in a while.
Right. And I get that they don't want to overexpose people if they're not going to be in any position to win, unless maybe they don't have any long-term plan for them. Like, oh my gosh, I can't think of her name.
Aaliyah.
She's done a lot of jobs.
But that was how Bayley and Alexa Bliss and even Sasha started, is they were just kind of these nondescript women who would show up now and again, lose more often than not, and then over time slowly gain traction. And I don't know. There's something about that that feels different from the way that Candice and Lacey and Dakota are being presented.
Kind of as a 50-50 booking like they did in, kind of with the mid-card in the Attitude Era. Kind of trying to keep everybody strong, and you got to do it at the expense of everybody else so you don't necessarily create a shuffle. You've just got a lot of people that can be pushed at your leisure. So I get it from a booking standpoint, actually, because nobody is so weak that you can't push them and have it feel undeserved. Like, on the main roster, you've usually got your guys who lose almost every time out. So when somebody like Jinder gets pushed really hard, it feels really out of the blue. But if he was out there being one of these guys who was trading wins and then jumped up a step, maybe that makes more sense.
It's just like,
it feels like maybe that's the idea. Go ahead.
A month ago, we thought it was going to be Candice and Shayna at TakeOver. And now here we are, and Candice loses in 8 minutes in a match that wasn't even advertised a week out. And it's like that there seems like a big drop in that sense. I don't mind her losing to Shayna. I don't mind her losing to Shayna clean, but in 8 minutes, it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe if it was longer. Maybe if they had dropped the Mustache Mountain match in another match and given them a takeover style TV main event, a 15-minute main event or whatever, where they really she got a chance to look like a star who just lost on a technicality, sort of.
Right. And they didn't want anything to overshadow the main event interview, and I get that. But yeah, this was an odd use of Candace, and I guess the weird thing about the women's division is I really have no idea who's next. Like, I don't know who's winning this women's championship match, and I don't know who's next. It's which is exciting in a way, but it's also just kind of confounding for somebody who normally really kind of knows what's about to happen on these shows. So maybe it's a double-edged sword, because I do like surprise. I always complain when I'm not surprised, and then when I have no idea what's going on, I get annoyed. So the problem's probably me. So anyway, Tom, do you have anything further on this match?
Yeah, I'm usually not one to be bothered by match length. You know, if it doesn't go into the double digits of minutes, it's not like a deal breaker for me, as long as I feel like they're telling the story in the ring fine. Although in this case, I am going to agree that this felt like an opportunity to do more with this match and build it up as something big on TV. And it really did surprise me that sure, we knew that they were going to have a match at some point prior to TakeOver, but they didn't announce it for tonight, at least as far as any of us saw. And they put it on this show where it wasn't even going to go on last, where it absolutely felt like something that could have gone on last, and it would have done better if it had a little bit more time, as it was. And it's not just because commentary kept bringing it up for obvious reasons, but it really just reminded me of their Mae Young Classic match, which was good, but it just kind of felt like the same match, except with a slightly tweaked finish. The post-match felt obligatory, but Kairi is doing really well with her emoting and going to a different level that I don't think she's gone to before with exactly the expressions that she's showing, and it's really working for me. I sit there loving on Shayna the whole time, and then as soon as I see Kairi, I'm like, gosh, I hope she wins. Let's see, what else do I have here in my notes?
The moment at the end, though, this. I don't know if you agree with me or not.
Yeah.
When she stood up and she was like glowering and she did the slow stand up and stare, I was just like, oh my gosh, she's Asuka-ing it up.
Oh, really? No, see, that didn't occur to me. It felt sort of like a very dramatic anime thing, which is, you know, part Kairi and part camera work.
Okay, and so I'm just being racist.
But, hell. I guess, if you were able to go back and point out a couple times that Asuka has had that exact reaction and remind me of it, then you wouldn't be. I will say that I liked the touch that Lorray and Baszler were adding in there, that each time, like, Baszler kept giving her opportunities to either give up or just take a count out. And every time Lorray wouldn't forfeit to those outcomes, Baszler just looked at her like, really? You're stupid. Now we have to do this the painful way. And if I have one nitpick about something in general that this match reminded me of, and you guys can tell me whether you agree or not, devastating though they may appear, the more I see the stomps that people are doing to fingers and shoulders and whatever other body parts, the more those stomps become like the ones that are done off the turnbuckle, the double stomps that, you know, I think Del Rio popularized them, and now we see a bunch of other people doing them, notably Shane Strickland, you know, where these excellent workers are doing a move where their opponent has to hold themselves up. And like when Shayna stomped on Dakota's shoulder, that was startling. And it worked for me because at the time it hadn't been done a lot, or at least not that I had seen. So I wasn't thinking, okay, Dakota should know to move her shoulder here. But now that I've seen it more and more and more, it's like, okay, you know, Candace probably could have slipped her fingers out from under where Shayna's boot was going to come down.
Okay. Yeah, wow. You know, I hadn't thought about that, but I will look for it now.
Well, I just ruined it for you then.
Yeah, you've ruined all of pro wrestling for me. Actually, I'm done with it.
it's a badge of honor.
You ruined kayfabe for me, and I'm not taking any more of this.
I can't believe they're just sitting there chatting with each other in a loose headlock. I mean,
right? What the heck? Like they're telling each other what to do. Like it's all predetermined. I did have a friend over, a friend and his girlfriend, last week, and she actually asked the question if it was a legitimate competition. Like she didn't know. She didn't think it was stupid or anything, which is cool since most people do. But yeah, she didn't know. So she was legitimately interested in it. So I actually talked about, I don't get to do that very much anymore. Other than with my kids a couple of years ago when they were asking about it and they were very concerned about a certain wrestler. And I was like, okay, I'm going to smarten you up to the business and you're still going to enjoy it. So who cares? But yeah, that's something I got to do during the, we were watching the G1 Climax, which I watch every match in the G1 Climax. I'm like four matches back right now, but I will catch up tonight after this show. So
she was watching a Toriano match and wondering if it was fake.
I don't, you know, I want to say at the time it was the first match we were watching, which was Elgin and Minoru Suzuki. So yeah, it was very, you know, Suzuki goes pretty far. So for her to ask, I was like, yeah, this chair stuff that he's doing wouldn't fly in a real competition. But yeah, we talked about that. But since I brought up the G1 Climax and I was going to kind of segue this anyway, I would say as far as you guys talking about match time, I think that is something that WWE underutilizes as a way to get lower card people over. It is a lower card person going 15 minutes with an upper card person is almost as good as a win. It really is.
Yeah.
And you see
if
that.
If this went to a time limit draw, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, you see that in the Climax too, because there's somebody who, like Yoshihashi against Kazuchika Okada. So not every one of my listeners is going to get this, but Okada almost never loses. Yoshihashi almost never wins. These guys go a long time in the G1 Climax, and Okada puts him over good with some very, very convincing near falls. And it goes like 15, 20 minutes. I want to say it was closer to 20. And Yoshihashi is a good wrestler. He's just never been somebody they really push. And he's got I don't really know what he is. I don't really know who he is. There's not a whole lot there to latch onto. He's just a good worker, just a good hand. He comes out of this G1 Climax looking really good, even though he didn't do all that well points-wise or isn't going to do all that well points-wise. You can put somebody over so much just by giving them ring time and really surprising people. And if they're a good worker, all the better, because Yoshihashi is definitely a good worker, as is Candice LeRae. So, you know, give her that time and she gets over. And when her time comes, then you're good to go. I do have another email that I'm going to read. This from Andrew Gamble. What do you guys think about Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke joining NXT/WWE? I might be counting my chickens too soon, but I am a little worried there might be too many females with the fighter-turned-wrestler gimmick with the Four Horsewomen and Sonya Deville all in the same company. Shayna and Ronda have obviously done well in acclimating themselves to the wrestling world, but I'm not sure about the other two. I don't know anything about them other than Shafir is engaged/married to Roderick Strong. Do you think they will be able to set themselves apart and be seen as something other than Ronda's friends like Shayna so far has done? I'm not going to speculate too much on the two of them that haven't been here. I don't know what they can do. I thought Marina did okay in her documentary segments with Roddy. I don't know enough about Duke to tell you anything there. Tom might have seen more than me. I don't know if these two have done anything there, and we'll get to him. But as far as there being too many, I think that if we're thinking of the women's division as we did 10 years ago when the women's division was like 7-8 women and that was it at any given time, then yes, this would be oversaturated. Like, I remember when every female wrestler, in addition to it being a small division, they still were samey. Everybody, JR either called you a Spitfire or a Jezebel. That's what there was. There were Spitfires and Jezebels. So now it's not so simple. It's not so one-dimensional. I get what Andrew's asking here, but if the size of the entire company can handle it, then I don't think it's a big deal. The problem for me arises if you're going to stable these people and have that be a part of Survivor Series, which I know many have talked about, including all of us on this show, then you're going to have kind of, remember the idiotic gang wars just as Attitude was starting, where you had the Latinos, you had the white power bikers, and then you had Nation of Domination. There was always going to be a low man, like the Twins didn't win very much, and Chains didn't win very much. Crush would. Savio Vega got a lot of wins, but Estrada didn't, and his other guys didn't. Nation of Domination did a little better as singles than the other two teams did, but that, I think, for me, that's the bigger problem here with people with a group like that that could be easily stabilized, if you will.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Tom, do you have any other inside info on Shafir or Duke, and what do you think about this whole question?
Only very little. I mentioned a brief interaction with Duke on the last episode, where I saw her at the food trucks, asked if she was going to be in the May, and she said, if they let me. She seems to have a very cool, chill personality. She does do a gaming YouTube channel, or I think it's on Twitch, and then she puts it over to YouTube, called 8-Bit Amazon. I've only watched a very little bit of it. Nothing has really drawn me in. When she does her hashtag BRE best roommates ever with Shayna Baszler and Mia Yim, she's kind of the third wheel, I feel. It's maybe that's just me, because I already go in watching because of Baszler and Yim. I'm not watching because of Duke, but I leave like, okay, I'm going to watch the next one because of Baszler and Yim, because Duke hasn't really given me anything to go on. But who knows? I haven't seen him work. I haven't seen Shafir work. Not many people have. They just started at live events recently. As far as Shafir, the only thing I've seen was a quick video they put up on Twitter, where I think it was right after her match, and she was all excited about her win. And she said something. She was holding her son. I think it is his name Trey. And she said, "Mommy's coming," or "Mommy's gonna get." She was sort of like working on a catchphrase that has to do with the fact that people know her as the mother of Roddy Strong's son, which, I mean, if she can parlay that into being a badass in the ring, cool. But yeah, that's pretty much all I know about where they're at right now. Survivor Series is coming up quick. I have switched gears to not really thinking that's going to be on the docket for this year.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Yeah, and the reason I like it, though, although, you know, Gamble's concerns are not unwarranted, I feel like each one of the horsewomen, even though we don't know much about the two ones that are new to NXT, they each have their own personalities, like the four horsewomen of WWE have. They're each their own individuals, and they have that legitimate alliance that you don't really have to do much work to sell it to us. We already know who the four horsewomen of MMA are. You just put them on stage together, and the story is already told, especially and I don't see them doing this soon, so maybe Survivor Series 2019 does start to make a lot of sense. And I feel like I'm going to start saying that every single year, as we all have been for the past couple of years. But maybe that starts making a lot of sense, because maybe around then is when Rousey could turn heel, and she could do that by having these heaters that come to the ring with her, depending on what ends up happening with Shayna as well.
Yeah, and Rousey is so over and doing such a good job. I understand them not wanting to tempt fate by having her work heel against really well-respected female, not really a stable, but a stable of baby faces. So I can get that if that was the reason for not doing it. Or maybe if this was just stupid fan speculation all along, it was never going
to
happen.
Right, of course. And something that didn't occur to me until just right now is it could be a babyface match. I think people are invested enough in that happening. We've been speculating it for long enough that regardless of the storyline, it's almost like you wouldn't want there to be much of a storyline, because especially around Survivor Series, WWE just goes crazy and does a bunch of really dumb stuff. So it's almost like, you know what, just book it and give me a video package. I don't want anything.
And if it's face face, then it can be built on the fact that the two worlds don't respect each other, and the end of the match can be the two worlds expect each other.
There you go.
Because you've got it comes down to Charlotte and Ronda, as you might expect, or maybe they'll surprise us, but it seems like it could be those two. And then the worlds are, you know, you got the eliminated women have just, they've not been able to leave ringside, or they've all come back to cheer on their person. And then, you know, they walk out with the 8-person handshake / hug. So, yeah, there you go. Survivor Series, WWE, we're still booking you for free. Yeah. Thank you. And you're welcome once again.
Before then, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
My prediction for this fall is Kairi Sane and Io Shirai against Shayna, Jessamyn, and Marina.
Okay. Sounds good.
Handicap.
Handicap, or maybe they bring in, maybe the girls bring in Maiko Satomura? Satomura?
I haven't seen her name,
but yeah, she's the woman who was just announced the tournament. She's like a legend in Japan, one of
the toughest
of all time. She co-founded Sendai Girls.
Yeah, there are a lot of people being announced for the Classic this year that when they pop up, like her, probably most notably, I'm like, I'm embarrassed for not having heard of this person before.
She wrestled in WCW in 96. That's how long she's been around, Maiko. So
I would have seen her.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. She was young then, but...
No, definitely, because I didn't miss any of the stuff they put on TV at the time. So I would have seen her.
With Kairi and Shayna doing their thing right now, Io Shirai and Kairi have a long history, and Io's in the Mae Young Classic. I'm still thinking either we get Jessamyn or Marina in the Mae Young, and maybe that starts something.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Well, we are going to cover the large amount of tag team stuff that went on this week. Big fan of tag team wrestling and a strong tag team division, and it seems like that's what we got. So, we open the show with Heavy Machinery against the Mighty. Not a handicap match this time. Heavy Machinery is at full strength, and they win as a result of interference from Street Profits. Heavy Machinery goes over the Mighty, setting up the Mighty and Street Profits as a match down the road, and for me, probably one that will end up happening on that TakeOver pre-show that gets shown the following Wednesday. Feels like one that's going to be that. We had Mustache Mountain going over Matt Knox and Brandon Taylor, who I, before they said his name, I put him down as Lil Killian Dane. that's what I put down. And so we got that. And then later on, we had Mustache Mountain and the War Raiders in a little backstage segment. War Raiders still kind of a work in progress on the mic, but they'll get there. We had all of that going on, many moving parts in the tag team division. So on Machinery versus Mighty, Mustache versus Matt and Brandon, and the backstage stuff. Tom, what did you think of this whole week of tag team action?
My only weird factoid about the Mustache Mountain thing is that their opponents were collectively known as State Line, and they did get a full entrance at the tapings, even though it wasn't televised. It was actually kind of an odd night at the tapings because almost every single jobber got a full entrance, and that does not usually happen. The War Raiders thing, is it, I mean, maybe it's just because I didn't watch any of their prior work. Is it bad that I was really jarred by their just plain American accents? I almost wanted them to fake a Nordic brogue, you know?
Yeah, you never know quite what you're going to get. And and when somebody's like doing full Viking regalia, I think maybe you expect that a little bit. But right. If they can't do it, they can't do it. So better they don't do it than do it really, really poorly.
And so. To be fair, I was a bad NXT fan, and the night of the tapings, that show that aired, I didn't go back and watch it in full, and I understand that there was, now that I'm thinking of it, a War Raiders video package on there where they colored them as Viking enthusiasts. So perhaps maybe they got some time on the mic so maybe they had some verbiage in that video that would have prepared me for this a little bit better. And then regarding the Mighty, and loving tag teams the way you do, Kelly, maybe you can set me straight here. Obviously, especially in WWE, there's a formula to the face-heel tag team thing, and some teams do it better than others in the most basic of matches. But I feel like, although I would have been happy if TM61 or the Mighty stayed faces, because for the first time after coming back from injury, for the first time in their NXT tenure, as we talked about when it happened, I was starting to care about them. I am not objecting to the heel turn. I think they're still somewhat interesting. However, every single match that they have had since turning heel has been the exact same match with just a slightly different finish. Isolating one person in the corner, the hot tag happens, the hot tag person does their thing. The whole time Nick Miller is running his mouth. He's very good at that. And then to subdue the hot tag thing, they pull something cheap like the chop block tonight, or the pin, the leverage pin, assisted from the outside. Not sure how that one physically works, but you know, whatever, it's pro wrestling. That one I'm gonna give a slide to. I'm not trying to crap all over the Mighty right now, because I'm in favor of them. I want them to do well. But I have a hard time getting invested whenever I see them come out. It just feels like when I hear their music now, I'm like, oh, okay, I don't really have to pay attention to this one because I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, when a heel team works as a heel team should, that's a thing of beauty. And I think that's what they're working towards. There is a sameness that kind of happens that can be a good thing or can be a bad thing in wrestling. There's a big group think in wrestling, and sometimes you get away with being samey and sometimes you don't. Bret Hart, before he really, really put in his best work, was very, very samey. And even after that, he had his five moves of doom, as popularized by online writers and things like that, that he would always do as setups. And that became kind of a joke. And I think he played into it and he did it. But it's not like he was doing the same match over and over at that point. But that came with the reps. He was working with a lot of different types of wrestlers at that time. Ric Flair, I've heard fan friends of mine have said that they don't like him because they felt there was a sameness to his things. But that's because some of the things he does has... I think that's more a product of you really remember big things like he does, one-of-a-kind things he does, like the Flair Flop and the Flair Flip.
Right.
Those kind of things. So, obviously, the Mighty are a work in progress. When you are on the indies and you've only ever worked the indies for a long time, you can get by doing that for a very long time because you're working in front of different crowds, and nobody is seeing more than three or four of your matches a year unless they're following the company, which is pretty rare with a touring indie company. So they get away with it a little more. And so I don't want to fall too far off of my point here, but I just think that I guess my point is that a lot of these guys who have done the indies for a long time actually take a longer time to acclimate because it's like an old dog learning new tricks, if that makes sense. I like the
Absolutely.
Act. Yeah, I like the act, but I really want it to be refined into something where they can find new ways to cheat their opponents and find new ways to be jerks, because then you really start getting pissed off at somebody. Right now, if they're doing the same stuff every time and getting away with it, then you're just saying, well, the baby faces are just kind of idiots at this point. So
yes, exactly. And that's all I'm asking for, is just a few tweaks here and there. And maybe it is just as simple as them feeling a little bit more comfortable in this environment, in this new role, to feel like they can branch out a little bit into yeah. other things, assuming that that's even the issue. Maybe I'm overthinking it. It's just, you know, of course Hogan's going to Hulk up and do the point and do the leg drop. And of course Cena's going to do the shoulder blocks and the shuffle and whatever else he does. But you know, it's hopefully mixed up a little bit here and there. So, yeah, if just a few tweaks, they don't have to reinvent the wheel every time.
Right. Yep, we've seen a great heel team down there. We saw the Revival come up with new ways to cheat their opponents, even within
They're
each
exactly
match.
The template that I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yep. So, and they were their template was the Brainbusters. So there you go.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
If you have nothing further on the entire tag team week, then I'm going to shift over to Harley for what he thought about the tag teams this week.
Take it away, Harley.
Funnily enough, of the six K teams we saw this week, the Mighty was the one I was most invested in.
Wow. Okay.
I think just because they had new gear, the black and white gear, they had these long jackets, and I was like, oh, this is something new. This is different. Whereas every time Heavy Machinery and Street Profits come out, I think, have I learned anything new? Have I seen anything new from these guys in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months? I don't know. I feel like both of those teams are just kind of the same that they were back then. And, you know, and they've had opportunities to change and grow in significant ways. When Street Profits were totally embarrassed in the last, what's the Dusty Classic? Remember they lost in like 2 minutes because they were fooling around with Paul Ellering at ringside, and they just got totally like clowned on. I thought, oh, this is going to be something new and different for them. And then they went back to just like goofing off on the basketball court, and Heavy Machinery got attacked in the gym and beat up, and they were a bit more serious tonight. We didn't see the Caterpillar. We didn't see too much, but I don't know. I still felt like, oh, it's just like, well, I'm not seeing any like big leaps and bounds. I don't feel like any of these teams are closer to being on the same level as Undisputed Era and War Raiders, or closer to being taken seriously as potential tag team champions or even number one contenders. And there's something, especially in the first match, there was a moment where Dozovich had been selling for a while, and the fans were trying to get him into it. They're doing the classic, you know, 80s, early 90s thing. The fans were clapping to get Dozovic powered up. And Tucker was just standing there on the apron, just watching what was happening in the ring. He wasn't encouraging the fans, like playing to the fans, like, come on, like trying to get the fans louder. He wasn't clapping along with the fans or really rallying for Otis. And I was just, I don't know, for some reason that stuck out to me. And I just really went like, ooh, like this guy isn't, I don't know. He's missing some of the fundamentals here. That's like a classic babyface moment that the fans were handing to him, and he was looking like a big Cass out there, deer in the headlights.
Yeah, some of these guys, I'm sure they just get into a zone and they kind of forget that the audience is there. And in many ways, that's what separates the men from the boys. So, Yeah, it's a missed opportunity, but you can also make a career of just ignoring the fans as well. So I don't know. I've seen old wrestlers kind of give advice on both sides of that spectrum as well. But as a babyface tag teamer, I do think that's indeed a fundamental. You and I, Harley, have been the most critical of the heavy machinery act. For me, I feel like it's where it should be slotted. They're doing okay matches, fun matches that are not overstaying their welcome. And they lose most of their big ones, and they win one like this that's actually kind of forwarding a story, and it does them a little bit of a boost winning a match, which you don't even really get to see out of like a Cassius Ohno. So even though they're the Cassius Ohno tag team, they're picking up a couple of wins because of this reason or that. So for me,
they're going to be the next Too Cool or Crime Time.
Sure, and that's not a bad place to be. You can do that for a couple of years and be successful. And you know, crowds India, they think maybe you can win. And you know, we Edge and Christian, when they were in the Brood, that's what they were too. They never won. The Brood never won. They were losing almost all their matches. But they were huge. They had the
because they had the wrestler during the daytime.
Best, yeah, right. You know, they were it was unfair to them, but yeah, they were very cool. Their music was even cooler, and it just got you fired up and could open a show. Heavy Machinery, I think, has a lot of show opening matches in their future, and that's a good thing. I think they're where they need to be or can be. I'm sure they want more, and I hope they want more and are striving to be even bigger, but I don't think that's a bad place to be. As far as what else happened this week, I thought we got a nice little step forward and a surprise step forward for me for Mustache Mountain. I didn't know if they were going to do anything further with Mustache Mountain, but I guess I should have known since they got new jackets. But yeah, this is... I really love Mustache Mountain in the ring. I loved what they did with the story of throwing in the towel, and I love that that was used to enhance their friendship rather than take away from it, which is the easiest and most boring way to go forward in that story. I like what they did. I also really like that we actually saw the Street Profits again. We didn't see him wrestle. We haven't seen him wrestle in a while. But I feel like this was a small step forward for them, and hopefully they can pick up some momentum again. It seemed like they had all this momentum that kind of fell apart when the engagement and the marriage were happening. Although I can't say that that Bianca has lost a step at all. If anything, she's gotten hotter. So... I feel like we've got some babyface teams lined up. Obviously, we got our match, and we've got other teams that can maybe challenge afterwards. But it's always a work in progress. So there, that is our tag team stuff. We do have an email about the one tag team that wasn't on this show. A guy named Jared, whose last name is difficult, but he helpfully refers to himself as JB from Detroit. Hi, team. I got to thinking this week. What would have happened to Undisputed Era had Bobby Fish not gotten hurt? Conversely, what would have become to Roderick Strong, who was treading water? Regards, JB from Detroit. What do you guys think would have happened, Harley?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I have no idea whether or not the plan was always to add Roddy, and they would have been doing like a New Day thing where one week it's Fish and O'Reilly, next week it's Fish and Strong defending the titles instead and going round robin like that. Or if they would have just stayed true with Red Dragon, Fish and O'Reilly as the champs, Cole being their henchman on the outside, and maybe Roddy would be, you know, battling Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander on 205 Live right now.
Yeah, I was going to say 205 Live seems like it may have been a good answer to this question. After how that pre-Mania tournament for the title, because the title was vacant at the time. That's right.
Some guy got fired.
Right, whoever that was. How that turned out, it, as much as I was thinking, okay, this is a call up for Roddy, at the end of it, I thought, oh no, it was just a featured spot, almost like a cross promotion. I would like to think that they wanted to turn him heel either way, because he, there's no argument for him being anything other than stale as a babyface. So I would like to think that they wanted to do that one way or the other. Either way, I say Undisputed Era, their trajectory does not change. They probably became more interesting as a result because of adding Roddy, and that is the question, is would Roddy have joined them regardless, or would he have perhaps turned heel and been doing something different right now?
Yeah, I don't know what they would have done. I believe that Roddy would be up in 205 also, and whether he would be doing anything important there or not, I'm not sure. He did the tournament, obviously, and he went deep-ish. I want to say he was Final Four. He was at least Final Eight, but I think he was Final Four. I'd have to – I watched it. I was there. I'd just have to rewatch it. So, yeah, I think that's probably where he'd be. Fish and O'Reilly, obviously, the plan was to keep them together. But I dare say they're doing a really good job with Fish of allowing him to keep his face out there, keep being annoying, which he's really good at doing. Like he's a jar. He likes to talk when he's out there, and I think they're doing a good job of keeping him fairly hot for when he comes back. And as the weeks pass, I wonder what's going to happen when he comes back. Is he going to want his spot? And I said for quite a while, no, I don't think that's going to be a big deal. They can just do free bird rule or whatever they want to do. But I start to see more and more of an opening for this to actually be like an issue that they have with Roddy. And I don't know. Maybe it's just maybe it just got into me now, but I can see that happening then. I think, JB from Detroit, that this was a series of happy accidents. I don't know that this was the plan, but it worked out so well that it looked like the plan. So I'll say that. It was just another well-done series of changes or audibles or whatever it was from NXT. I'm sure that they didn't plan on Bobby Fish having a hugely terrible injury. I'll say that much. But yeah, that's our tag team segment of the week. It was good. It was fun. But yeah, lots of work to be done.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
The final match and segment, we had EC3 versus Kona Reeves. Velveteen Dream interrupted this. We had a very strange thing this week, which we had two match interruptions. Now, when a heel interrupts a match, the heel's supposed to win the match that's in the ring. When a face interrupts a match, they're supposed to cost that face the ring, and that's supposed to cause the trouble. When the face interrupted, Street Profits, Heavy Machinery still won, and they won because of it. And here, where the heel intervened, it still didn't do enough. Kona still didn't overcome EC3. This match was okay-ish. It existed. I think Kona's fine. I can't get into EC3. I can't. I'm trying. It's not happening yet, but I do dare say this was my favorite of his interviews so far. It seemed a little more organic, a little more realistic, and seemed like he's going somewhere. Maybe he needs a storyline, some kind of direction to feel like he's doing something. But it was a step forward in my view. What did you guys think? Tom, EC3 versus Kona Reeves and the interview afterward.
Negatives first. The distraction was egregious. I could not believe that EC3 was just standing there gawping at Velveteen Dream. Not that that's not the natural reaction when Velveteen Dream is present, but when you're in the middle of the match, come on.
And the music, the just angle. The music playing during an interruption. Come on.
Yeah, the camera angle helped a lot here, because just watching on TV, you could excuse it, maybe say like, oh, well, Kono was probably just lurking and waiting for his opening. But, you know, to watch it live, he was just selling the whole time. It looked ridiculous. I also am not on the EC3 train at all. I can't say that I'm trying too hard to get on that train, but I would like to think that I'm open for something to grab me as that train rolls by at whatever stop I happen to be at. He, in the match, it's just, you know, there's nothing wrong with, say, Triple H adopted Harley Race's Facebuster. Everybody does Jake the Snake's DDT, and everybody does Arn Anderson's Spinebuster. There are certain things that are inherited, but when EC3 is blatantly doing a People's Elbow clone, and then he's also doing that thing where The Rock would slap the person a couple of times and then go back and spit in his hand and slap them again, he's doing a version of that too. And it's just like, man, you know, watch a little bit more tape than just The Rock. You know, I know that's short selling a guy who's been working for a long time and is very highly regarded by many, many fans. But it's just not working for me. So those negatives aside, I actually liked Kona here because he looked more confident and more motivated than ever. And I don't know if it was just the fact that he was up against somebody who's being positioned as much more prominent, and this was easily his biggest match to date. But I at least liked the fervor that he was presenting, and I mean, I'm such an entrance guy, and this was Kona's best entrance. Yes, they've tweaked it a little bit as far as the lighting and the intro to the music and everything, but even he looked like he was embodying everything about quote unquote the finest. And it wasn't just, hey, this is my new gimmick, I'm still kind of working my way into it, go easy on me, you know. He felt like Kona, the finest Reeves tonight, and it gives me a little bit more hope for him.
Yeah, it was a subtler and more sustainable and better overall entrance. I did like his offense more in the match. It felt more organic and real. With EC3, I always feel like I'm watching a professional wrestler. I guess that's the whole sentence. I always feel like I'm watching a professional wrestler just kind of fake wrestling. God, that sounds so, so harsh. But it just feels like I feel like I'm watching him work. And sometimes it works very well, and sometimes it doesn't work for me. And I don't know. I'm hoping that it comes with time, because if they're going to try to push him as a babyface, then this isn't going to work. If they were pushing him as a heel right now, which they were, but it seems like they're just kind of listening to the fans and going with the flow, then this whole stagey thing that he's got going might not work on a national stage. Like, Winter Park may have kind of forgiven it, but I just don't know. Harley, talk us off the ledge. What do you think?
About EC3 or Kona Reeves, I'm fully with you both on Ethan Carter. Everything he does is so hammy and over the top. It feels, I don't know. It's like everybody else is Saturday Night Live and he's Matt TV. And I hope that's insulting, because I meant it to be.
That's I would take Mad TV over SNL a million times, especially at the time they were both on. But I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, my thought this week, I think it's the same thing that's happening with Cole. I honestly believe Full Sail is cheering him for what he did before he came to NXT, not for what he's done in NXT.
Absolutely.
Cole's character isn't the least bit likable or doesn't do anything that makes you want to cheer him, but I think they're cheering him because, oh, I remember you from being the Elite and Ring of Honor and New Japan. I think they're cheering EC3 for what he did in TNA, because EC3, the character on this show, I don't know what he is or what to make of him. He's rich and he talks about how he's better than everybody, but we're supposed to cheer that, and he's got this weird Muppet hairstyle, and
I just hate all of it. And all the things
all
you
of
just
it is
said,
such a weird.
I would never hang out with that guy. Like I would actively avoid hanging out with this guy. And
he kind of looks like a Muppet. Like his color, because it's so like his spray tan, and then his hair, and the fact that he's so over the top animated. It is like, maybe that's my new thing. C3's a Muppet. That's his gimmick. Yeah. Kona Reeves, on the other hand, I mean. I don't know. He's okay. He's serviceable, I guess. He lost. And so I think this is the end of him. The end of him, like, getting enhancement wins and stuff. I think Reeves is officially now CJ Parker, Bold MC, No Way Jose. I think that's his future.
Maybe. I didn't get that feeling here, just because I felt like the entrance and everything that was going on, and the fact that there was actually a storyline, which is more than you could say for those guys for the most part.
But he did get CJ a big distraction from the heel, which should have given him the victory, and he still couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And he had his finisher, and EC3 kicked out, and yeah, that doesn't. Yeah.
I guess that all bodes poorly, but we'll see. This was this the end of the taping? Is there one more episode, Tom?
I believe there are two more.
Two more. Okay. So there's all kinds of time left to go. I guess we'll see where he goes from here. We've seen that where somebody got their one big win and then they went away. And then we saw, you know, some of them have done really well, like CJ Parker has done extremely well. He's the U.S. champion in New Japan, and he's in the G1 Climax and having good match after good match. Lots of fun stuff there. So he's come a long way as a worker. So maybe someday we'll see him back, and hopefully he'll take the Juice Robinson name, because I like that a lot more than the nondescript CJ Parker, which is like on the level of Brandon Taylor in Forgettable. I was trying to think of CJ Parker a couple of days ago, and I couldn't think of his old name when I was watching him on New Japan. So anyway, we got snarky there at the end. But you know, we need a little of that. That is our show, unless you guys have anything else. Harley, I know you like to do some stats. I don't know if you had any stats for us this week. You want
the only one that really came up?
Some?
The only one that I came up with, because most of the people featured in matches this week are all right in the middle. You know, the Mighty, Heavy Machinery, Candace, they're all like 300, 400 records, a couple more wins than losses, right? Pretty much 50-50. But Shayna is now 7-1 on NXT television. And so it's officially currently her record is better than Paige's. Paige had 23. So in the history books of all-time greatest NXT women's records, it's Bianca Belair, then Asuka, then Shayna Baszler.
Cool.
Okay.
Asuka has that one no contest on her record,
right,
which prevents her from having a flawless record.
Who did Shayna lose to on regular TV?
Ember Moon in her first TakeOver debut.
Okay, so you're counting TakeOver. You said, NXT TV, I was thinking of the weekly show, and that
shocked me.
Sorry,
I mean televised NXT events.
That makes more sense. Okay, so that is our show. If you want to talk to us, you can go ahead and email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. This is PWT Talks NXT. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host. Still recovering from an awesome but exhausting break, and coming back and doing all, you know, doing real life stuff again. That's difficult to jump back into, guys. I'm going to write an NXT tracker for you here pretty soon. And as we roll on towards the next takeover. So I am Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter @SpookyMilk. I live tweet shows sometimes. And then I go dormant for a few months, as is the Twitter way. Harley, who are you?
I am on Twitter @TalkingHonor.
And Tom.
At Tom Stauff. And I think I've been slightly less annoying lately because the main roster has been so bad that I haven't been watching it and live tweeting it as much.
Yeah, I have completely stopped watching the main roster other than pay-per-views, which have been middling. They've been okay. But we're not worried about that. That's not our show. It's not our problem. We are
Tom, when is the Mae Young tape?
Forced to watch that.
Gosh, very soon. I've got tickets sitting right here next to me.
What are the date?
I should probably remember when that show's going to be.
All right. Well, guys, we went long. We do that not as long as last week because, this guy right here, this is the one who directs traffic and tries to keep it less than 3.5 hours. But, what are you going to do? It's the WWE way, gang. So thank you all very much for liking us, for listening to us, and all of that. This has been PWT Talks NXT. Cheers, folks.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.